Hey, Jono, good morning.
Maisie, Scotty, how are you guys?
What was the highest
Bradley.
number you ever wore at a footy club?
Oh, crikey. 33 at the Dogs in my first year was the highest number
See.
that I ever pulled on. The one game I played at Williamstown in my last year with the Dogs, I thought I might have rocked up there and got in the high 60s.
Yep.
But they gave me the famous number 18 from Williamstown,
Oh,
actually,
wow.
which was really nice of them. Like that was a huge honour to get the 18, which I remember Simon Lloyd running around in the 18
Yep.
back in the day, champion that he was. So that was obviously a thrill. So I would have liked to, in deep down though, maybe got a 77 or a 90. Would have
What's
been
who's who would have the highest number in the AFL at the moment?
Oh, is it 50? Ben Brown's
Yeah,
50.
Ben Brown's
I don't
50.
think
Is
we've got
there a
anyone over
51?
50. No.
No, they generally didn't go any higher because of just because of the locker numbers, pretty much. I mean, within the change rooms, there's all the numbers on the lockers going to go up to about 50. So I think that's where it sits.
Social distancing now too. You really got to stay below 50 because you can't squeeze too many more in the locker room. Hey, Jono, before we get on to Thursday night footy, because I think it's a fascinating clash tonight between Carlton and St Kilda, now under the roof at Marvel. I wanted to chat about Steel Sidebottom. We heard, I don't know if you heard the comments from Eddie Maguire last night on Footy Classified, but he was very strong in saying that he won't be dropped from the leadership group. If you were a leader at Collingwood or part of the leadership group, what sort of conversation would you be having with Steele over the last couple of days?
Oh, look, I think the main thing that, and I'm sure Scott Pendlebury's got plenty of experience in situations where he's had to deal with certain things, and you deal with the good and the bad along the way. So you've got to adjust to that. But the first question you've got to sort of find out is why, and it's a bit out of character from what we know of Steele Sidebottom. So that would be the first thing that as a captain you'd be asking, why were you in this position? What's going on? Is there more that we need to know about? What's happening with you off the field in certain aspects, and hopefully that the player would open up, especially if it is an out of character situation that we haven't seen from pretty much ever in his career. So that's the first thing. I think they're right in terms of not pushing him out of the leadership group at all, because he's made one mistake in how many years has Steele been playing? You know what I mean? He's been a great example for that football club for a long time, and you know what? He is one where if you say this will not happen again, and I know we don't like to use those terms too much because you just don't know what's around the corner. But ultimately, with Steele, you can be confident with that this probably will not happen again. So therefore, it's a great example for the rest of the group to say, look, everyone can make mistakes along the way. Everyone can make the wrong choices. We've got to help them through that, and then he'll understand that the punishment and has accepted that. So I think the fact that he's copped that on the chin is a form of leadership in its sense anyway, and look, he'll learn from this and won't make it again. So I wouldn't be getting rid of him out of the leadership group either.
The 4 weeks, was that about right from the AFL?
Oh, I think because of the way that the story unfolded and grew, yeah. So I think the punishment is about spot on. It might be a little, honestly myself, I was thinking 3 based on what we'd seen in the past with the other breaches and what they had got, and when the story started to come out, I thought probably 3 weeks is what Steele will get here. He's got the extra one, so it's inflated a little bit. But I think the message has to be hit home hard, doesn't it? That in Victoria in particular, we're in a really vulnerable place at the moment, and we just can't be making mistakes. I know the players are tested a lot, and they're quite healthy at the moment, but just can't take that risk within the environment of the AFL. And it's really tough at the moment because the AFL will be trying to making so much decisions on where the fixture's at and where we're going and how they're going to create these hubs. They don't need to be dealing with players, causing problems through breaches.
Strange time for a lot of the players too, who've had to move out of their homes, essentially, who are in those hotspots. I don't know where you lived, Jono, when you were playing footy, but how would you have gone moving
Don't
out of a
worry,
hotspot?
Jono wasn't in a
Here we go,
hotspot. He was, I think, the upper Williamstown area might have been clear of any hotspots,
I wasn't in a yacht in the middle of the bay,
Jono. Oh,
Scotty, that's for
you were
sure.
overlooking the water, Brad.
No, I was a few hundred meters from the water, Scotty, to be honest with you. But I did live in Williamstown. It's not in those suburbs.
Not yet.
But not yet. And that's exactly right there, Maisie. It's not yet. And that's the important thing that we need to stop. right now is the growth of this virus to other areas of Victoria. Yeah, so players they've been thrown another curveball by having to move out of those hot spots, and you know the Bulldogs will train pretty much right on the border of a couple of them as well. So it really is a time I think that they'd actually be quite happy to get on the road and get to another state if they can, play some footy there for a month, and then possibly get home after that.
What's your take? I mean, Trent Conchon put it on the record. There's going to be some players who will have issues, pending birth, illnesses, etc. But he sort of seemed to throw up there was a few who might, you know, not want to go. To me, Jono, it's your job. It's only a short-term thing. This is an asterisk season. Just get in and do it.
Yeah, it's got that feel about it. I understand, Scotty, that I'd probably have a mentality similar to that as well. But you've got to understand the personal aspects of things. And I think we do all understand if we had through work as well now, if you have some family concerns or, you know, your wife might be too far from giving birth or you've got some illness within the family or what, however it looks, then I think it's only fair that that becomes the first nature of your thinking and that you might have that opportunity to stay at home for the short term. I sort of hope that we can get under control, Scotty, seriously here in Victoria so that we don't have to quarantine when moving interstate. And I know the players, as I said, get tested a lot anyway. But if it becomes that their club might move for 4 weeks, for example, that a player might have to come home for 1 to 2 of those weeks. And I think that's okay. I think clubs can be... have got the list size and got the talent and healthiness at the moment that they can obviously cover those types of players. But it wouldn't concern me one bit if a player had to sort of jump on a plane or get back to their family for a week or two.
Now, Jono, Carlton were very publicly said the right things, Brad Lloyd, earlier this week on this program. But talk about pivot. Carlton v St Kilda at the MCG is a lot different to Carlton v St Kilda at Marvel Stadium.
Yeah, it is. It is a little bit, isn't it? I think. Well, the Saints have played Marvel brilliantly so far, and you know, Bradley Hill. No wonder he went back to St Kilda playing under the lid. Some of the things he's doing is amazing. I actually said last year, I saw Bradley Hill in the airport last year, and I said to him, "You'll be in the All Australian squad for sure this year, Hilly." And he didn't even make it. So that's how well I was going as my judge that year. But I love him. I absolutely love this guy. He is, you know, one of my favourite players in the competition. And he's hit the ground running with St Kilda, as has Hanbury. He's back to some great form. It's a bit disappointing that Zachy Jones is out of the side with an injury because he was, really starting to get some good, consistent midfield minutes that he didn't really have at the Swans. So right inside, which he's thrived on. But they get Jaron Geary back, their skipper, so a bit of leadership through that area. He'll try and restrict the influence of a couple of the Blues along the way. It should be a pretty good game tonight.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more in depth in just a second. Just one last one before we sort of leave the issues of the week. The state of the game and then Alistair Clarkson's comments. He got his way. Mark Stevens reporting last night on Channel 7 that the umpires got sent a memo about holding the ball which said, where a player is in possession of the ball and has not had prior opportunity, a field umpire shall award a free kick if the player is able to but does not make a genuine attempt to correctly dispose of the football when legally tackled. So as soon as Clarko says something, it makes a few more waves than a lot of the other coaches. Change straight away. What did you make
finally,
of Clarko's maybe. Comments?
Finally. Yeah, finally. Yeah.
Are you happy with
yes,
that?
Yes, oh, 100%. How many times do you sit there either watching Fox or we're commentating at games and a player will be tackled and that ball will just pop out and you'd be like, that's holding the ball. That's dropping the ball. Like, let's call that free kick. So we're going to see that now, which is great. And it did come to a head this week thanks to Clarko. I think, you know, obviously on the back of Hawthorn not being rewarded a free kick at all. And there were a few within that game that no doubt should have been paid. You know, dropping the ball and we would have all moved on. So I think it's great. I think it'll be great for the game. It should move things on quickly enough in terms of that aspect of things. But the way the game is played at the moment, look, for me, it's just the frustration that I see with footy is the backwards kick that the opposition give the other team. So they might be 70 metres out from goal. They'll kick it back to 30 metres out from goal. The opposition will compress that up, man the mark with intent. And then that kicker kicks it back to 60, 70 metres out from goal again to the same spot because they can't switch the play. If you come outside D50, and go back inside D50 with a backwards kick, that's the one that should be pretty much play on for me, because then that'll put teams under the pressure. I'm only going backwards to there if I can switch anyway, so they mightn't pull that trigger as much. So therefore, the kicker at 70 has to make that decision, and therefore he either goes into the corridor and tries to switch it on the 45, or he goes down the line a little bit inboard to set up his team, you know, to get them progressing down the field a little bit more. So that's one for me. But other than that, you know, yeah, we've got a little bit of work to do. I think the coaches, if they can get in the future, it won't happen now, but in the future, if we can get more positional play within the game and get that structure back the way that we know our game to be, I think that'll be a win for everyone.
We had your old mate Rocket on Tuesday, on the show, talking about a couple of the changes that he'd implement, and you mentioned kicking backwards there. Is there any others that spring to mind that you would change immediately, or you'd just maybe change that one, see how that settles, and then let it evolve?
No, I think the main aspect of it is the way that the game is coached these days. And that's okay. They're coaching within the realms of what they are allowed to do within the footy world. So they can compress the ground and they can stretch the players out to play zones as much as they possibly can. But for me, you know, and I still will love the game forever, but it's just got to that point where it seems to be a mishmash of a lot of sports into one. Like I look at basketball or soccer and all these other sports that have evolved with the times and they've been modernised. But when you look at them, they still look traditionally like the game that I've watched for 20 or 30 years. Whereas footy, in terms of our game, doesn't look like it did 20 years ago, 10 years ago. It's evolved into all these other aspects of sports, whether that is rotations, whether it is zones rather than positions and those sort of things. So, yes, deep down, you know, I'd love positional play to come back in some form. That can only be coached that way. I'd love to get my hands on a team, boys, and maybe give it a crack. Oh, that'd be exciting, wouldn't it? The fact that you could just, you know, try, just see if it worked. You know what I mean? Take it for a pre-season and see if it worked. And if it did, wow, look out. Look, we celebrate a couple of years ago when Danger hurt his ankle and went down to full forward and Hawthorn couldn't handle it. And he kicks five. Like, hang on. You know what I mean? We celebrate fast play when that used to be the norm, and that's what we loved about the game. So how do we adjust it back that way? Well, it's up to some coach to take the courage. That's why Port Adelaide and Gold Coast are going well at the moment, because they play good defensive footy, which we know is a part of the game, but they play quick footy. They play on at every opportunity. They get through. They allow Dixon to stay in the position that he does, or Robbie Gray down there. It allows King for Gold Coast to be in a marking position more often than not, because he's not a player that can get right up the ground and back consistently. So those two clubs are having success at the moment just because of their style of football. Slow, controlled football is nearly becoming a thing of the past, to be honest with you, I think, in the competition.
I can see the headline already. Johnson .. I'm ready to coach. Give me the reins.
On the attack.
No, I love it.
The next Malcolm Blight.
I'm going nowhere, let me tell you that. But geez, it would be a good little challenge, wouldn't it, just to see that if you actually played these guys in the positions they'd love to play in.
Yeah,
I reckon they'd thrive, because they come out of systems where they, you know, have played positional football. Now they've got to learn zones, and they don't get to play to the absolute strengths we know they can. Yeah. And it affects the game. And I think that would be a huge shift.
Absolutely. That'd be a fantastic thing, John. I'm looking forward to you taking over the reins of somewhere this year and just all out attack. That would be
here we go.
Fun. Time for a break at 22 past 7 on The Breakfast Club. On the other side of this, we're going to focus in on Thursday night footy. I do enjoy footy coming a day earlier for most of the weeks this year. It is fantastic.
You've joined The Breakfast Club.
It's short in the week, which we're pretty excited about. We're looking forward to it. We actually planned over the isolation period for games 5 days apart. We thought that might have been one of the situations, so we actually trained a little bit around that. And the last couple of weeks, our Thursday session, we've actually had to pull back because the boys' intensity's been a bit higher than we thought, so we think we'll be ready to go.
David Teague there speaking yesterday ahead of the clash tonight at Marvel Stadium. Carlton and St Kilda, 7:40 p.m, the bounce of the ball. Two changes for the Blues. Fisher and Mackay come in. Phillips been dropped and Silvani injured. For the Saints, they regain captain Jaron Geary. Zach Jones, though, a loss. He is injured with that tight hamstring. So a couple of changes for the Blues and just one for the Saints. Jono, We spoke briefly about Marvel beforehand, but how much of an advantage is it for the Saints, considering their pace, their record under Brett Ratten at Marvel's unbelievable? 5-1 since he took over, and the only game they lost, they choked after coughing up a 31-point lead against North Melbourne. So they're playing well with Rats under the roof.
Oh, Rats can coach. Don't worry about that. He is one serious coach. So I think, he plays a pretty good style with these guys, and he's allowing, as we spoke about before, allowing the talent to come forward, which is good. They've recruited well, but the Blues are an exciting one as well. Like, both teams coming off, some serious wins last week. The Blues hanging on against the Bombers, and what St Kilda did to Richmond to win by 26 points was quite outstanding. So, look, this is going to be hopefully a fast-paced Thursday night footy game where we can actually get the round off to an absolute flyer. So I'm wrapped. The AFL has put this game up first, and it's a good showcase for these two teams. They get put up in lights, and they're both developing teams. We understand that, but it's a chance for both to really show the competition where they're going to sit seriously this year. And they'll both be sitting there, I'm sure, saying, well, we're a chance here to. We've got to be better than Carlton. Be saying we've got to be better than St Kilda to make any ground in this competition. St Kilda will be saying we've just got to clean up Carlton to continue to push forward. So it'll be a really interesting matchup. And I know there's been a lot of talk around Levi Casbolt, but you've got to take your hat off to this guy who has done a truckload of work behind the scenes with different people within Carlton to get his game to a level, his skill level to a position that is well and truly now acceptable in the AFL competition. And you can tell his teammates really trust him now. They've always trusted him in the air, but you can tell they trust him in front of goal. And I think that's been one of the biggest growth areas for Levi and the way that he's playing his footy at the moment. He's really holding up the way that Carlton look at the moment.
And they've got Mackay back, so it's an impressive forward line. I did the Richmond Secure game last week, Jono, and in a shock, Paddy Ryder hasn't recovered enough and is an emergency. And Rowan Marshall, I mean, I don't know if you were in this camp, but when we saw Ryder come to St Kilda and they go, no, we're going to share it. It's going to be 50-50. The kid was never going to embrace that straight away, and he struggled. Last week, by himself, he was outstanding. It was a good battle, so was Nankervis. But Marshall as the lone ruckman makes St Kilda a very good team.
Yeah, it does. And he's so athletic. And, you can tell that Marshall is he's sort of trying to have a mould of a Grundy or a Gawn. You can see that in the way that he's playing, and I think he'll get to their heights in the next couple of years, no doubt. It's going to be a great contest. Pitney's been in good form as well. His game against the Catters was very good, consistent again last week. So he started to find his way also. So these two young ruckmen in the competition will have a huge say on the game. And look, Marshall will get a chop out from maybe Battle along the way, or whether that's Tim Membry just takes a couple of stoppages forward of centre. So that'll just help Marshall to position himself behind the ball a little bit to get a bit of a spell throughout the game. And I think that works for him.
It's a whole mindset thing, isn't it? I mean, clearly you go in knowing it's all on me. They seem to respond. And a lot of ruckmen are like that.
Yeah, that's right. And you can understand why St Kilda. Look, Marshall has shown in the past that he can play forward and he can play out of the goal square quite successfully because of his athleticism. And it's sort of, he moves naturally down there. It's not manufactured, his movement. So I think St Kilda can see that. And I understand why they try and get a little bit more from him, especially in terms of their thinking with Josh Bruce moving over to the Bulldogs. How are we going to get that second tall down there to help Tim Membry get the right matchup, Josh Battle get the right matchup now that he's back in? So I think we'll still see that throughout the year, that Ryder will come back in and Marshall will have to spend some time forward and he will have to embrace it. It actually could make St Kilda a better team along the way.
Rammer and I couldn't understand why Essendon on the weekend didn't send anyone to Sam Doherty, who racked up 32 disposals in the win. If you're the St Kilda coach Brett Ratten tonight, are you sending who are you sending Jaron Geary to? Because he played that defensive forward role a couple of weeks ago against the Western Bulldogs. If he plays the same role again tonight, who are you sending him to?
Yeah, that's probably the one, isn't it? When you look at that matchup. Other than that, Jaron Geary might just get off the leash a little bit tonight and he might either play that defensive role. He might go down and maybe lock onto a Jack Martin, who's probably their most dangerous mid-size forward, who can, he can kick up to 4 or 5 in a game. If you can restrict him to minimal possessions, maybe 1 or 2 goals, that's a huge win for your team. So there's a chance that he may have to, you know, produce a role like that. But what about Doherty's return? Seriously, we highlighted him last week on Saturday stretch as well, and in the lead up to the game, that he was enormous in, you know, missing so much footy. His possession rate's up. He ranks number one or two in all the major categories stats-wise for Carlton. Like, what a return to football for Doherty, and he's hit the ground running, and he's really, you know, helping the side in a big way at the moment.
Yeah, you often see players who come back from knees, they always say there's that 12-month period where they just sort of try and adjust to the pace of the game again and get the confidence in their leg. He's done it twice, his knee, that is, and he's come back as if he hasn't missed a game. It's been an extraordinary comeback.
It really has, and I think it's aided by the growth in the side overall. I think that's really helped Doherty come back in. So he's not the lone man down back trying to do it all, and they're getting smashed by a lot of ball down back as well. That's changed now. So, you know, they're more consistent through the midfield. They're getting a lot more ball forward of centre, so he can set up himself and his teammates more effectively. So I think that's played a huge role in allowing him to settle back into this side more comfortably than if they're under the pump, you know, losing every week, which they're not at the moment.
And another key player for Carlton, who I think he's coming from a long way back with a lot of people, Mitch McGovern seemed to have a pulse last week, Jono. And when you see him do a few things, it's like, hang on, if they ever get Kerno, Casbolt, McGovern, Mackay, if they ever get them all on the park, it's pretty exciting.
It's a huge forward line, isn't it? It's a big forward line, but it's an extremely mobile forward line. And I think that's what we'll, you know, you expect with McGovern. We've got to remember with McGovern, like that back injury after that training mishap where he took that absolute screamer at training and fell on his back. Yeah, he's fractured his back. Like that would take a fair bit out of you, and it would take a little bit of your confidence away as well in terms of what you produce in the air, because you don't want that to happen again. So, he did show a bit last week under pressure in terms of, you know, we started to circle around McGovern a little bit in terms of those expectations of him as a player. And I think the expectation should be quite high for him. And, you know, maybe the penny has dropped on the back of that. And he looked like mentally he was in a great spot. He looked really determined in his approach to the game. And now that's the consistency of McGovern. Will we see that determination in the way that he moves in his body language, which had a positive effect on his performance? Will we continue to see that in the coming weeks?
One matchup I'm looking forward to tonight. It's not quite what we used to get 20 years ago with the full forward and the full back, but Max King v Jacob Wiedering is going to be a matchup we'll see for hopefully the next 10 years, and we're getting a preview of it tonight, albeit Max King very early on in his career. But, Jono, have you seen the start of the year for both of those players? I mean, King's done some really promising things, and Wiedering, he's almost in all Australian form to start this season.
Yeah, I'd agree with Wiedering, no doubt. He's probably the in-form fullback of the competition at the moment. He's not getting beaten in one-on-ones. He's right up on the back of his opponent. He's spalling well. You know, he's using the ball a lot, the best I've seen him in his career so far as well. When he gets it, it's usually staying in the Blues' hand. So Wiedering's been super. And it's a challenge. 200-centimetre King, these King boys, they know where to find the footy. They know where to put themselves in the right position to compete. So you're right, this is going to be a great matchup, and we'll see it throughout the night. And, you know, King's got that ability, both of them have actually, to mark that ball at the highest point. So it's going to be difficult for Wiedering. He's going to have to do a lot of body work early. Wouldn't surprise me if Liam Jones gets a little bit of a crack at this. Liam Jones has got a huge leap. So he might actually try and just get off King a little bit and put Wiedering back on memory. But just get off King a little bit and try and jump to spall rather than getting caught out. And Jones has got elite closing speed as well. So he might be the one that puts more pressure on King than what Wiedering will. And you reckon Wiedering and would be able to handle a battle or a memory as well in that matchup.
King did a couple of things last week, Jono, like little handballs, ground ball gets. It's like, oh, hang on. Yeah, you're not just a tall kick it in the air man. He did a couple of beautiful little flicks, and clearly there's a lot more there than just a tall forward goal square type.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, you're right. And we speak about both of them at once in a way with what we see with Ben as well. And I think that's, you know, both ground level are excellent. And they're exciting for the competition. They're exciting for the respective clubs that they're performing for at the moment. So, yep, there's no doubt with that. You know, and under the roof, it won't be slipping away or anything like that. It's usually pretty pure footy. So it'll either come lace out or if it does hit the deck, he's not out of the contest. And that's exciting for the guys like Butler, who will be at his feet, Billings. Mm. You've got Kent as well. And we can't forget Jack Loney. Jack Loney goes under the radar. We never talk about this guy, but he is one of the most dynamic small forwards in the competition. He plays where you sort of think he might be a little bit frustrating to watch, but this guy gets the job done every single week at the moment. So, you know, he's one to look out for as well, and I think he loves playing at the feet of King.
So tip for tonight, Jono, Saints to win again after their good performance last week, or can the Blues bring their form from the MCG to Marvel?
I put my tips in that early in the week, Maisie, that I'm trying to remember who I've tipped.
Well, mate, it wouldn't have even been a game. This would have been happening on Saturday.
Scotty, have you...
You would have noticed there, which is great. In the Herald Sun
Blues,
tipping...
the Blues?
Who made a surge last week? Everyone would have noticed that it... You've gone the Blues by 2 points.
Right.
I thought it was the Blues, yeah. So I'm going to stick with them. I think it'll be a really tight one, Scotty, as I've said there. But it should be a ripper. Where do I sit in the tipping? Did I get 7 last week,
Funnily,
Scotty?
You got 7 and you're 1 behind me there. Oh. I came from the bottom row to the top row in 1 week. 8 out of 9. Richmond was the only loss. So you and I are the only threats to these other clowns.
Look who's winning the 40
to the Premier's in front. But
Dan Andrews. Get on the bench.
He's doing well, isn't he, Dan? He's got a lot to deal with at the moment. He's getting his tipping right.
Absolutely.
No, we're in the game now, Jono. 21. We are right in the game.
As long as I beat King, Ralph, Dermot Brereton and Sarah Jones, I'm a very happy man, Scotty.
Jonesy's onto us. Dermy, he's the same as us. King, we got covered. Not a problem.
Yes, alrighty. Love it.
Jono, thanks for your time again on The Breakfast Club this morning. The boys will be back next week after their week off, so enjoy another edition of Thursday Night Footy tonight. We'll see you on Fox Footy all throughout the weekend.
Will do. Enjoy, everyone. Thanks, Maisie. Thanks, Scotty.
Brad Johnson joining us there. You can catch him.